On the second Sunday of Lent, we always look at this gospel of the Transfiguration, and the question is why. There's actually a feast of the Transfiguration that also occurs at another time of the year. But we look at it because the real purpose of this, it would seem, in Jesus' mind, was to prepare at least some of his apostles, for the difficult days that were ahead. They're on their way now down into Jerusalem for Jesus' final journey there before his passion, death, and then, of course, resurrection. It's going to be some difficult days. And so he wants them to get a perspective, to be able to see, this is who I really am. I'm going to be handed over. You're going to see me weak and tortured and spat upon and disrespected. But I don't want you to forget who I am, not for my sake, but for your sake. And I don't want you to lose heart. Peter, James, and John go up with this high mountain with him. Now, I think, though, that there's a good look for us also at a little bit about our life and the purpose of trials and so on. The title of the homily is from the old, from the old spiritual, that every round goes higher, higher. See, we're climbing Jacob's ladder, soldiers of the cross, and every round goes higher, higher. Now, let's begin by looking at this gospel. Just note this, something that almost everybody overlooks: the climb. So, the first thing we want to look at when we look at trials is the purpose of trials. In order to get up to this high mountain where they're going to have this powerful experience, they have to make quite a climb. Within 2 weeks, I will be up on Mount Tabor. I'm going to go to the Holy Land here at the end of the month, and I'll be up there on Tabor about 2 weeks from today. Today, we take these high-powered taxis, or little buses, up the backside of it, and it's even that is kind of hair-raising. They go these hairpin curves, but Jesus didn't have a little taxi. he and Peter, James, and John had to climb up the rough side of the mountain. The rough side. And climbing, as you know, is hard. These were hardy people, unlike us. We go around the block and we're out of breath, right? But they were hardy people, but still, to climb up a high mountain, which Tabor is, about 1,400 feet up there, and it's a high mountain. You get beautiful view up there of the Jezreel Valley and the Valley of Armageddon or Armageddon. But it's quite the climb to get there. Now, don't miss that. See, you are enjoying things today in your life which are the fruit of climbs you've already made. I mean, what do you have that you really value that you didn't have to suffer to get or pay to get to some degree? Maybe it's just the college degree, but maybe it's the career, maybe it's the kids you've raised. Hard work, climbing, difficulties, see? And all the different trials in life, too, that have helped to make us who we are. Even getting up this morning with one less hour of sleep, but here we are. So again, we see that there is a purpose to trials. Now, the Lord's saying, make this climb with me because I have something to show you. And you will see when you get to the top that it was worth the climb. Will you and I trust God in this way? As we make the climb to heaven, to glory. We too have a mountain to climb. It's called Calvary. But over that hill is glories. Unspeakable and joys untold. But we have to trust the Lord, don't we? Just like Peter, James, and John says, Lord, of all the things you've asked, why do we have to climb this mountain? just now. It's a hard, difficult climb. I would say it probably took them the better part of the day to get up there. Now, just a few thoughts on trials in general in our life, and you've heard me on this before, but I would say that God permits trials. I don't say that he causes them, but he permits trials and difficulties in our life. Why does he permit them? For some greater good. Just like, for example, you who are parents would often permit trials in your children's life. You would often push them to to take on these trials or these challenges so that they would grow. You know, if everything is just pleasant all the time and don't worry, Johnny, Mary, I'll take care of everything for you. You know, the kid becomes spoiled rotten and real problems. So again, there is a purpose. And so God has some purposes in mind in allowing trials. Now, I'll just give you this list and just take a quick look that God uses problems and trials to direct us, to inspect us, to correct us, to protect us, and to perfect us. Now, first of all, he uses trials to direct us. You know, sometimes God has to get us going in the right direction and get our attention through trials. When things are going pleasantly, you know, we're very amused and very often distracted. But sometimes you hit a bump in the road and God's got your attention, see? Or sometimes God needs to close one door in order to open another. So God will often, then again, as I say, permit certain trials and difficulties to direct us. Now, there is another understanding that God also uses problems to inspect us. Not that he needs to inspect us, but that sometimes we need to learn what we're made of. There's a saying in 1 Peter, "You should greatly rejoice now that for a little while you have to suffer the distress of many trials, but this is so that your faith, which is more precious than fire-tried gold, may prove by its genuineness to be worthy of praise, honor, and glory when Jesus Christ appears." How genuine is your faith? Are you just reciting catechetical formulas or slogans, or have you come to know in the crucible of your life how true and necessary these teachings are? And it's trials very often that help us to test God's word in the laboratory of our life. So we see that God uses prior trials to direct us and to inspect us and likewise to correct us. One of the Psalms says, "Before I was afflicted, Lord, I strayed, but now I keep your word." Likewise, Psalm 119 says, "It was good for me to be afflicted so that I might learn your ways." So again, God corrects us through some of the trials that we endure. We see how foolish and unpleasant are the ways of sin. And God permits then that we should stray into them so that we learn and yet then return to him. So he directs us, inspects us, and corrects us. And likewise, God protects us with some trials. A simple example you've certainly heard before, you're late, your traffic is running and you're late. But because of you're running a little behind, you weren't in the intersection when the big truck came through that would have, you know, destroyed your car and killed you, you know? See? So you just never know. Well, sometimes God is allowing a trial to prevent something even worse. Are you praying with me? So he directs, inspects, corrects, protects, and finally, God perfects us. Romans 5 says that we can rejoice in trials. For when we run into problems, we know that they are good for us, for they help us to learn to be patient, and patience develops strength of character. Likewise, the letter of Peter says, you're being tested like fire tests gold and purifies it. And you are more precious than any fire or any passing gold. So again, the Lord, if you will, uses trials in our life. There's a purpose to some of them, to them. Now, look, again, you don't have to run and start liking them. I'm going to worry about you if you do, right? I mean, there wouldn't be trials anymore, right? But again, the point is that when trials come, do not easily lose heart. God might be up to something good. Lord, I'm asking for deliverance, and yet he delays. But remember, you think you know every detail about your life and what's best for you. So do I. We don't have any idea what we're talking about, you see. We have no idea. We do not see as God sees. All right. So first of all, note this climb up Tabor. And note that this climb has a purpose. Something great is waiting at the top, but the climb is necessary. Now, what are you enjoying today, as I say? I invite you one more time to reflect. What are you enjoying today that you know really is the result of long, hard work. What are you enjoying today? There are many things. And not just your hard work, but think of the hard work of others. You and I are enjoying these lights and the heat in this church. But someone's working in a coal mine. Someone is, puts those gas pipelines in place all over the country and maintains them. That is not pleasant work. How many of you really want to work in a coal mine? Huh? Come on. Right? Do you see the sacrifices of so many so that we can enjoy good things? Do you see your own sacrifices so that you can enjoy good things and that others can enjoy good things? All right. Enough on this topic. We move from the next, from the, not just the purpose of trials, but we move now to the productiveness of trials. It simply says that after all this climb, the climbing has paid off. And I've already introduced the point. But it simply says that Jesus was transfigured before them. And oh my gosh, the beauty, the glory, so much so that Peter would cry out, "It's good. It is so good that we are here." And then a voice, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." All this confirmation, this beauty, this glory, this strength. Now, we see that his clothes became dazzlingly white and so on. Let me read to you another account of Jesus Christ in all of his glory. It's from Revelation chapter 1. And John is caught up into the heavens. And he says he had a glimpse of Jesus in his glory. How the Lord Jesus hid his glory while he was among us. We could not endure it. And yet, he always had it. Do you know the glory of Jesus Christ in your life? Listen to this description that John gives in the book of Revelation. John said, "I turned around and I wanted to see the voice that was speaking to me. And when I turned, I saw seven gold lampstands. And among the lampstands was one like a son of man, dressed in a robe reaching down to his feet with a golden sash about his chest. His hair was white like wool, and his eyes were blazing like fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in a furnace, and his voice was like the sound of rushing waters. In his right hand he held seven stars. His face shone like the sun in all of his brilliance. Oh, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. Then he placed his right hand on me and said, 'Do not be afraid, for I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I was dead, and yet now look, I'm alive forever, and I hold the keys of death and Hades. And when I open, no one can close, and when I close, no one can open.'" Do you see Jesus this way? I'm afraid sometimes many of us have reduced Jesus to kind of a harmless hippie. Remember, never forget, he's the Lord. He is the Lord. And he can save. And he has the glory and all the power to save you. And oh, to just see from, to get glimpse of that glory can sustain us. So again, there is this magnificent experience of the glory of Jesus. Now, Jesus emptied himself of this glory to come and save us. But never forget, it is his. And as we see him suffering on the cross, and we may at times wonder in our own life when there's suffering, is God powerless? He is not powerless. He works his ways in ways that do not conform to our thoughts or our thinking. For example, how did he conquer Satan? You see, you don't beat pride by becoming prideful. Then pride has you. That's not how you beat pride. You beat pride by its opposite, by humbling yourself. And so it says simply that Jesus conquered Satan pride. Humiliave semet ipsum factus obediens usque ad mortem. He humbled himself. Humbled himself. His very self. Even unto death. Death on a cross. And so it is that even in his weakness, Jesus with his little finger is casting out demons. You say, but he takes his time, Father. Yes. For our sakes, if he were to do everything at once, we could not endure it. In fact, we'd probably be swept into hell too. But the Lord is great. He's glorious. And this is such an important moment because he needs these apostles to lay hold of this truth. Because difficult days are coming. And in your difficult days and in mine, we need to remember God is still glorious. And there is still a glory, a joy unspeakable and glory untold waiting for me one day in heaven. And every now and again, we just need a little reminder in this earth to get a little roughed up to say, this ain't it. This ain't it. Something greater is waiting. We want to forget that too easily. So we've seen then the purpose of trials. We've seen, if you will, this next understanding, if you will, of the productiveness of trials. All that climbing gets them to this moment. And then there is the pattern of trials. The vision ends. Suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone but Jesus alone. Peter, of course, had cried, "Oh, Lord, if we could just stay here." But no, we can't stay here now, Peter. This is a foretaste. This is a glimpse to the other shore. For now, we've got to go down this mountain and go up another hillside called Calvary. Come, let's go forth. Now, for now, in our life, we have these mountaintop experiences. We do experience some of the fruits of our trials, but not fully, and then we descend back into the valleys, not the pleasant valleys. And this is the pattern in our life. Now, what is the pattern of your life? Let me just simply say it plainly, as Saint Paul says it. Your life is the Paschal mystery. That's not just something that happened to Jesus. That's your life. In mind. St. Paul says, describing his life and ours, "For we are always carrying about in our bodies the dying of Christ, so that also the rising of Christ may be manifested in us." That's your life, is my life. Now, every time when someone says to you, "How are you doing?" you say, "Fine." I've already told you, you better have an evangelical moment and say, "I'm pretty well blessed for a sinner." But another answer, the theological answer, when someone says, "How are you doing?" you say, "Well, always caring about in my body the dying of Christ so that also the rising of Christ may be manifested in me. And how are you?" But that is the truest description of your life. We use words like fine or okay or I've seen better days or, but at the end of the day, we are always dying and rising with Christ to new life. Sometimes a dozen times in one day. Sometimes there's that overall pattern in our life where we go through difficult patches in our life only to find beautiful experiences of long stretches where we feel so blessed to be in God's presence and then back into the valleys. These are the patterns of our life. For now, while we are here, it will always be the cross and the resurrection. It's always the pattern, always the pattern. And so the pattern continues. And if you kind of think about going up that hillside or that mountaintop, but the other image that I started with, which I'll end with now, which is simply this, that there's that image of Jacob's ladder. And Jacob's ladder isn't just a straight ladder, but it's sort of like a spiral staircase according to the genius of the spiritual. And it says that every round goes higher, higher. Now, think of a spiral staircase. On one side is the cross, on the other side is the resurrection. And as we go up that cross, or up that spiral staircase, at one moment we're looking at the cross, and another moment, the resurrection. Back again to the cross, but always one level higher. Every time we come back around, one higher, higher, as we go up that spiral staircase. We're climbing Jacob's ladder. Oh, soldiers of the cross. And every round goes higher, higher. Yes, the cross, but then the resurrection. Back to the cross, but higher. Back to the resurrection. Back to the cross, but higher, higher. Soldiers of the cross. You see, this climb to Tabor is a pattern of our life. The climb, the joy, back down the mountain, up another hill. It's always the pattern of our life. See, don't lose heart. Our life will have mixed in with it trials and joys, and back to trials and back to joys. It's part of our journey here. God permits trials. There's a reason. But every round, higher, higher. Soldiers of the cross. Amen.